And if you can't manage even this little handful of temporary resources that aren't even really yours, if this paltry pile of stuff becomes the 30 pieces of silver that causes you to betray the trust of your Lord and to forsake His values, pitch them aside and choose these values. If such a little thing is beyond your abilities, on what basis should you expect to be entrusted with more or anything that could ever be called your own?
You'll want to be sure to catch the rest of Pastor Terry's message in just a moment, but first we want to say thanks for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church podcast with pastor and author Terry Bailey. This podcast can be found on iTunes by searching for Terry Bailey Ministries in the iTunes store, where you can also subscribe to the podcast and get the weekly message sent automatically to you by clicking the subscribe button. Right now, let's get back to Pastor Terry as he preaches this week's insightful message.
Hope everyone has had a blessed week, and certainly that you are blessed to be here in the presence of the Lord this day. And I most of the time forget to say this, but blessings also to all those who may be watching on live stream this morning. God be with you out there in Facebook land. I'm going to start this morning by recounting one of those less than pleasant conversations that ministers sometimes get into. It's always hard for me to reckon this, but this from about 40 years ago when I was an inexperienced young senior minister in his first full-time senior ministry, and having just arrived at that, and I won't say that I'm really on top of this game yet, but I was less good at it once. I'll say that. When I came to Drexel Gardens Christian Church in Indianapolis, there had been some trouble in the months preceding my coming, and there were some families who had dropped out of the church and had not been there in several months. And of course, I went around and I saw all of them, if possible, to understand what had gone wrong as best I could, and to encourage them in their faith and possibly to return to the congregation. And there was one couple that I absolutely had to put up high on that list of calls, because the wife in this family had operated as the missions treasurer. Now, Drexel Gardens, the way they did it, they had three treasurers: the main treasurer, the building fund treasurer, and the missions treasurer. And a certain amount of every week's offering was put off into these other two funds, and the main treasurer would sort it out. It would get deposited in the two independent accounts, but the main treasurer didn't have a checkbook for those accounts. The missions treasurer had the checkbook for the missions account. The building fund treasurer had the checkbook for the building fund. That was just the way it worked there. And this lady had been the missions treasurer, and she left the church and had not been back in some months, but she had taken the missions checkbook with her and still had it. And although the treasurer had continued to deposit money into the missions funds, no money had been paid to any of the missions that we supported in all the time since she had gone home and kept the checkbook. So I went to see her. And I spoke with her at some length as she described the problems, the offenses, the hurts that had resulted in her decision to leave the congregation. And she was up front. She said, "I can never come back. My whole family, we can never come back." And I said, "Well, I'm sorry to hear that. I wish you well wherever you go from here, but I guess I will need the missions books And she said, "Why?" And I thought to myself, this was not a complicated issue. I said, "Well, you've just told me that you can never come back. It has been a few months now and no payments have been made to the missionaries that the church supports. If you can never come back, I need to find somebody else who's going to do this, and they'll need this checkbook and all the information that's provided in the accounting and one thing and another so they can pick up this job." And she said, "I'll have to talk to my husband before I can let you have the books." I said, "What time did your husband get home?" And she told me, and I said, okay. "I'll be back here at 7 o'clock this evening. That'll give you a little time to talk this out between you. But I mean, one of two things needs to happen. You're going to remain a part of the congregation and do this job, or you're not, and somebody else has to do this job, and I'll need these books." And I came back at 7, and I sat down with the two of them. And he asked me, he said, "Why did you ask for the books back?" And I said, "Just what I told your wife earlier. If you all truly cannot come back to the church, then somebody else needs to do this job, and I will need these books so they can do it." And he said, "I don't believe you." And I said, "Why don't you tell me why you think I asked for the books back?" And he and his wife vociferously agreed that this other person in the congregation, who had been chief among the people who hurt their feelings, had put me up to this. And I said, I'm sorry you think that, but I have not discussed this with this other person that you are referencing. And this is a straight forward, simple matter. And at this point, even should you come back to the congregation, I don't think I want you in charge of anything. So give me the books." I was more blunt in those days. They gave me the books. If you're curious about this kind of thing, they never came back. So, I tell that story in part because it has to do with turning in accounting books, as was mentioned in the parable, but I tell it also because it has something to do with the core principle involved in this parable. I'll come to that in just a moment. I'll tell you now that this is probably the least popular of all the parables that Jesus told. There's only one other that even gets into contention with it, and maybe I'll preach about it some other time. But people don't like this parable, and they mostly don't like it because they develop a series of misunderstandings. And here's the first one. Why did Jesus praise the bad guy? This guy was a liar and a thief and a cheater. Why is he praising the bad guy? Was not praising the bad guy. You just weren't listening very carefully if you thought that. Here is the deal. This man cared about money and ease more than he cared about anything else. These were his prime guiding values: money and ease. And he was willing to do whatever it took. If you value money and ease more than you value honesty, then you will lie to get money and ease. If you value money and ease more than you value integrity, then you will cheat to get money and ease. If you value money and ease more than you value the sacredness of human life, you will kill to get money and ease. It's a simple question of what is your guiding value, because you will pursue your guiding value at the expense of all others. And the fellow's master, who must have been something of the same mindset, who was also very much about money, at least looks at this guy and says, Well, you have to admit, he was pretty shrewd in the way he handled that, calling in my vendors one after another and reducing their debt so that they would feel like they owed him something, because I owe him nothing. And he's out the door. He's at least shrewd. You got to admire that about the guy. And here is Jesus' point. The children of this world, with their worldly values, at least pursue those values wholeheartedly and unapologetically and consistently. And in this way, they are wiser in relationship to their own than are the children of light, the children of the kingdom. You see, because in the kingdom, there is another set of values: love, grace, faith, hope, unity, perseverance, and the glory of Jesus Christ. What if the children of light pursued those values as wholeheartedly, as unapologetically, as persistently and consistently as the children of this world follow their values? That's the question. Man is not being praised for his wickedness. The point is being made about who pursues their values with their whole heart and who does not. I told you at the end of the conversation with the couple that my conclusion was, even should you come back to the church, I don't want you in charge of anything. You see, because they had a value that they were upholding. They were more concerned over their hurt feelings than they were concerned about the funds raised for the gospel of Jesus Christ going to those who were charged with preaching it. It doesn't matter that that money has not been distributed. You still have no right to ask me for these books back. It doesn't matter that the work of the gospel is not being done in the congregation, because the important thing is that so-and-so hurt my feelings. That's the important thing. Is it? Well, it depends on what your primary values really are. And here is the shame. When the children of light say that love and faith and hope and grace and the glory of Jesus Christ are their true values, but they behave as though money, ease, or power, or prestige, or the umbrage at whoever hurt my feelings, are my true values. There lies the real shame that Jesus is pegging in this parable. Now there comes a second point where people misunderstand what he was saying. People read that verse there where it says, use the unrighteous wealth of this world to make friends so that they will receive you into eternal homes. Oh, wait, you can buy your way in? If I just give away enough money, I'm in. Is that the deal that's being taught here? No, that is not the deal that is being taught here. Let me tell you a verse that has stuck with me solidly from my young manhood forward. What? Didn't you know? Friendship with the world is enmity with God. Now, what is being said here follows directly from the first point about our values. We all have some resources, right? We all have some resources, some money, some status, some ability. We all have some resources. And with those, we can be friends with this world and its values, or we can be friends with Jesus Christ and His values. And the friendship that we choose, as will be illustrated by the use of our resources, will do one of two things. It will tie us to this sinking ship, which, in case I haven't made clear, is bad. Or it will draw us to Jesus Christ. You are not buying your way into anything. You are only showing where your heart lies. For where a man's treasure is, there will his heart be also. No one is praising the unrighteous behavior of the unrighteous. No one is suggesting that anyone can buy their way into heaven. Jesus made the same point in some other parables. You will remember this one. There was this guy whose crops did really well, so well he had to build a bigger barn to hold it all. And he says to himself, "Oh, soul, take thine ease, for it's all good from here. Oh, thou fool. This night is thy soul required of thee. Then who shall these things be?" And there's that other one that's only halfway a parable, where Jesus says that you will encounter the sick and the hungry and the naked and the needy and the prisoner. And if you do something for them, it is just as though you did it for him personally. But if you neglect them, it is just as though you neglected him personally. You see, it's where that friendship falls. And the use of your resources shows. Now there's a third point in the parable, which is less confusing, but is equally important. I believe my notes are out of order. But it is this. If you cannot be trusted with a very small thing, how can you expect to be trusted with larger, more important things? And Jesus phrases it in a slightly different way as well. He says, if you cannot be trusted when handling things that don't even belong to you, how can you expect that someone is going to give you something to be yours? Mark you occupy a little piece of real estate over there in Minerva. 100 years ago, it belonged to somebody else. 100 years hence, it will belong to somebody else again. You pass through. You manage it for a while. And then your time for management ends. I don't know how much money anybody here has. Maybe somebody in this room has $1 million. It's not me, but maybe somebody has $1 million. Some people have $1 billion. I've been reading the articles about the expected rise of the first trillionaire somewhere, sometime. Soon enough, somebody will be a trillionaire. Will it be Jeff Bezos? Will it be Mark Zuckerberg? Will it be that Beatty guy? Who will it be? Will he be from Japan? Will he be from America? Will he be from some unexpected backwater country? Who knows? But there'll be a trillionaire. And here's what I want to tell you. $1 million, $1 billion, $1 trillion. To God, it's a handful of loose change. And that's all. It's a little handful of loose coins that pass through your hands for the few years of your life. And if you can't manage even this little handful temporary resources that aren't even really yours, if this paltry pile of stuff becomes the 30 pieces of silver that causes you to betray the trust of your Lord and to forsake His values, pitch them aside and choose these values. If such a little thing is beyond your abilities, on what basis should you expect to be entrusted with more? Or anything that could ever be called your own. Jesus told this parable, and He made these points. And it all comes back to what are your primary values, because those you will pursue in exclusion to all else. And the Pharisees, if you read just a little bit further than I read, the Pharisees laughed. Said they scoffed, hooted, scorned Jesus for His teaching. Now, just to clarify this, let me tell you that when they thought this teaching of Jesus was silly, Jesus followed up with another parable, and it was Lazarus and the rich man. I just want you to think about that for a minute. If you can't grasp this one, the follow-up is Lazarus and the rich man. What are your primary values? Are they those of the kingdom, or is that all just words? And you're really out there grubbing for the same stuff that the world chases after. What a shame, what a shame. If that should be the case. What does your use of your resources say about the answer to that question? And if you can't be trusted with such a small thing, if even that can pull you away from God, how shall you be trusted with more? I'm going to close with this. There's going to be much to do in eternity. This was one of the greatest realizations of my life. It was a very cheery day of my youth when I finally figured it out. I'm not going to spend all my time sitting on a cloud learning to play the harp. Nope. Much to be done in eternity. Oh, what a privilege to be a part of that. But if you can't be trusted with even this little paltry sum of things over which you have been appointed steward, how shall you expect to be trusted with more, much less given your own? What are your values? Are you pursuing them with your whole heart? Oh, I guarantee you are. It's just a question of identifying which set.
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our faithful listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church podcast. You can find out more about the church by visiting our website at www.christforeastcanton.com. That's www.christforeastcanton.com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and your family.